It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.
Small farms, whether family-owned or not, represented 46% of production in the United States in 1991. But by 2015, that share had fallen to under 25%, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Among dairy farms in Wisconsin, the numbers are striking. The state topped out at 167,000 dairy farms in 1940 and now has just 9,000.
While the average farm size is growing, the total amount of land in farming has remained the same, and small farms are feeling the pinch as agribusiness dominates. Contributor Dave Kozlowski says this should concern not just farmers and rural residents, but everyone. Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski spoke with Kozlowski, along with cattle farmer Kristen Jersick and dairy farmer Sarah Lloyd, about the alarming state of small farms and why they think things need to shift.
The trend has been big farming. Farms in this state and elsewhere are getting bigger. Small farms are dying. And this is true probably across the board, whether it's poultry, beef, pork, or vegetables for that matter. And the handmaiden, I think, to this process is technology. And there's a lot of gee whiz thinking when this technology comes out. And of course, it's expensive. And the only way you can manage incorporating that technology into your business is to get bigger.
And I think another part of that is what you might call the treadmill of production or the treadmill of technology that people get on, because my husband and I dairy farm with his family. We're three families in the operation. They expanded from 125 cows to 250 in like 2003, and that was to pay for a new milking parlor. And so once you take on that debt because you don't want to wreck your knees and your body bending down under dairy cows all day long, you then have to like accelerate your production, and then you owe money to the bank, and then you sort of get on that treadmill. And we've had pretty bad markets in a lot of different commodities. Dairy is in a terrible situation right now, but beef has been in bad situations. Corn and soybean farmers are in bad situations. So everybody's kind of just trying to eke out a little bit more production just to keep their heads above water. So part of it is just the pricing and the markets are not supporting family scale agriculture right now. People can't be in business. It doesn't work.
Well, you mentioned that you're a three-family farm, and a lot of farms, whether it's dairy, meat, or produce, are consolidating with each other to survive. And from what I understand, the need for people to do that is ever increasing because you need to be big enough so that you don't fail. Otherwise, you fall off the treadmill, right?
Yeah. And the other thing that I am concerned about is, you know, what are the bankers doing in this? I kind of really look to the credit industry because they're lending money to people to go well past our size, which is 350, to go to 1,000 and 5,000. Even though for dairy, we're in a terribly low price trough, and it doesn't make any sense to me, like from Econ 101, why it would make sense to, when you're losing money in every cow you're milking, how it would make sense to expand, but yet people are getting credit and financing to put these huge capital investments in. And then what happens to those, even if I'm three families, or maybe I'm four families, what happens in the next generation when I have $10 million in capital investment in this farm? I'm really concerned about the countryside and rural communities, because how is that ever going to transfer to the next generation? And that's a real question that I think we need to ask ourselves when we think longer term.
What we've seen is we're not reading our history. I mean, this is the same thing that happened in the late 70s and early 80s, which caused the so-called farm crisis of that time. The solutions weren't very good, and we're heading towards another farm crisis.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering was, you know, when were small farms in America last at a comfortable and profitable size and balance? Was there a peak, or has it always been a somewhat tumultuous business?
Probably the 40s, 40s and 50s, because then after the war, we started introducing all sorts of technologies that cost money, and to adopt them required farms to change their operation. So while there were still a lot of farms in the 40s, 50s, and 60s that were small and profitable, in part because the markets were there. There was still a lot of direct marketing of product back then. But the writing was on the wall. It was already heading in that direction. With his Errol Butts from the 70s, Get Bigger, Get Out, it was already there.
I mean, it has definitely been a long slog historically. I mean, I even think about our friend fighting Bob La Follette back in the early 1900s. And what was he fighting? He was fighting like railroad monopolies that weren't allowing farmers to access markets and transport their products. And he was working to break that up. So we maybe kind of break it up and then it gets consolidated again. And now we're in this new phase of mega consolidation in all of the sectors of the supply chain, which again just isn't allowing farmers to have good, solid markets where they can predict. And then you've also added a lot of volatility in the prices because we aren't regulating that. We aren't really watching how much speculation is going on in the market. And farmers don't have control. They're just price takers for the most part, except for bright spots where people are trying to figure out markets, direct markets. I mean, Organic Valley has been a bright spot in Wisconsin, but it's struggling right now for farmers. But that was where they figured out a market. They could control it from the farmer up to the product, and they could find the consumers that were like, yeah, I'll pay a premium price because I want to support farmers, I want to support cows on grass, I want to support reduced pesticide use. And so you saw that, wow, like, look, we could do this. And Wisconsin has such a great opportunity. We still produce a lot of things in a small and medium scale. And I think now it's now or never really to save it.
Wouldn't it be nice if the farmers in Wisconsin could go down to the Chicago Board of Trade and say, this is what we're asking for our milk.
You know? Yeah.
We're not going to take your price. This is what we want.
Yeah, and I do think it's a timely issue because as a small family farm, once all the farms get bigger, our supply chains go away. So we're losing the supply chains that support our small to mid-sized farms as well.
Right.
So.
We've loss of meat processors, loss of the trucking that people want to pick up the milk or haul the beef. They don't want to go to you if you're too small.
So what I'm wondering is this capitalism or survival of the fittest in the farm world, or is this a result of USDA or government action or inaction that has caused this climate?
Well, I definitely feel that some of the rules that have changed in Wisconsin over the last few years have made it much easier for large confinement farms to be sited in Wisconsin. So I think that's a huge issue.
Drawing parallels on how Walmart impacted rural communities and shutting down small stores, family-owned operations, is big agribusiness the Walmart of the farming industry?
Yes. I'll say it. Yes. you know, and there's something that we're perhaps overlooking a little bit because we're talking about the economics of farming. And as we all know in economics, economists tend to not want to include externalities. One of the problems we're having as we get big is we're losing our sight on how land is treated and how the environment is treated. The other thing is the shadow that is beginning to be cast over all of us, and that's climate change. I just heard a report this morning that they're predicting California temperatures to go up even higher than they have been and to get drier. Now, California is number two in dairy and number one in a lot of produce. We lose California. Are we prepared? Do we have a resilient food system? Do we have a way of bouncing back from that loss of that chain?
Also, I feel like we haven't taken into the socioeconomic cost of our food production. So the issues we're having around the state of Wisconsin with our groundwater and our surface water contamination, and that flushes all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico and the dead zone in the Gulf going out up to 25 miles now. So we're not taking those considerations into account at all when we're siding these farms. And it's a huge issue.
Farmers shouldn't be penalized for taking care of the environment. They should actually be paid for taking care of the environment.
Right. And one other aspect that's happening, especially here right outside of Milwaukee, is the buying of land for bigger industries such as Foxconn. So a lot of small farms are on the disappearing end because of industrial agriculture or commercial and residential expansion. So in a world where it's seen that a city's healthy if it is expanding outside of its borders and adding more houses. What is the case to remind people that, no, we need to keep a balance?
I like the word resiliency that you asked. You know, do we have a resilient agriculture? And I think when we think about cities and what their breadbasket is, we would do better. We would have stronger economy, better social relationships, and be thinking about the ecology of the situation if we really looked at kind of micro regions, but then the larger regions, and could really grow a lot of good things in a positive way if we thought about, you know, do we have some redundancy in the system? Like, I want more farms, not fewer farms. We need to really think about redesigning and reimagining the supply chains with a view towards transport, but just building community. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that that's a bright spot in people realizing that they can come together around food. And we have really good food here and really great food culture. So that's, to me, like in all the doom and gloom, like let's really invest in that.
With mm-hmm. developments like this, we also see it with the confinement farms. Mm-hmm. The confinement farms need a place to spread their waste, and so they can pay a lot more for the land than a beginning farmer. So as a farmer, you sort of get into this situation, do I keep farming for a very low margin, or do I just sell my land and be sad about it and move on?
Right. And, you know, you guys would know this better than I would, but the farmers that serve the CAFOs are on contract, right? So they're not necessarily connected to the price of corn or soybean or something that's on the market. They could get a higher price if they needed to.
Yeah, I think in different industries, like dairy versus pork versus, you know, crops, I think it differs to the extent people are on contracts. But that larger economy allows you to forward contract in mm-hmm. ways that even at 350 cows, like my husband and I, we don't have enough milk to play that game. Mm-hmm. And if you go to a 5,000 cow dairy, if you spend more than a day there, you'll see these marketing contracted people coming in about how you should put and call. And, you know, so you're not really connected to the real price. Mm-hmm. And I also speculate that there are probably investment dollars going into large farms in Wisconsin that they don't even care if they're taking a loss, because they may be covering a gain in some other sector and for tax purposes are looking for a loss, which is really sad when you think about how hard farmers work every day to produce good food, and you have this whole other part of the production that doesn't really care what the price is.
Right. And again, even if they care, they only care about the bottom line. They don't care about those externalities that we were talking about before. That's so important to the citizens in this state.
On the note of certain people only caring about the bottom line, farmers have a multitude of their own concerns. Why should urban communities care about this in what is mostly seen as a rural issue, especially if people aren't familiar with where their food is coming from? Because people in a city can go to the store, it's there, they don't think about it.
Well, if they would like to go on vacation around the state and have clean waters to kayak in or canoe in, be able to go to a campground and pump the water out of the well and actually drink the water, be concerned about the health of our state, the health of our citizens, then they should be very concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, small farms are more apt to keep wildlife habitat for insects and birds and other critters. People want those birds coming back to their bird feeders in the city. And if unless you have that habitat, they're not going to be coming back because they're not going to exist anymore.
One thing I was also thinking about is that American farming is also so romanticized by the public, you know, throughout time, whether people understand what goes into farming or not. You know, there's always this ideal that people think, no, there should be farms, there should be farmers. But is this romanticism a good or a bad thing when really there's a lack of understanding of what it means to operate a farm nowadays?
I hope that people are still romantic. I'm still romantic, and I shovel some poop every once in a while. Yeah, but people should get it, because I think that the risk is that they look at some things that they don't understand and say, oh, all of that is bad. Because, you know, there are things that go on a farm every day that a person that's never experienced that might not understand and be concerned about. If you just think, You know, things are born on the farm every day. Things die on the farm every day. It's a real cycle of life. And the more that we can get people coming out to farms, seeing farms, meeting farmers in the city, that would be a great thing to just continue to expand on so that they can understand what's going on in the background.
And Sarah, you mentioned earlier that if people and business operations can really decentralize and put that importance back into regional foods truly so that pricing, market value, all those things reflect that, is it the role of the government to do that, or is it the role of consumers to push for this? How do we begin that step?
Yes. Both. Both and.
It is. Because, I mean, who's the government, right? It's us. And this issue is really an urban issue, not a rural issue, because the city is our marketplace. And unless folks here get concerned about the environmental issues and, quite frankly, some of the health issues of the food that's being produced elsewhere, then nothing's really going to happen because the government's not going to act and markets aren't going to reflect any changes. So the people really need to take an interest in this. We need to get relearned about
local and knowing your farmer and
where
knowing
our
food comes from and how your food is actually raised. There's so many different labels out there that I can see where a consumer would get confused. Over the last 15 years, we went from a few labels on food to a multitude of them. So it's almost hard to navigate that whole labeling chain. But if you actually go out to the farms and meet the farmers and spend time with them and know how they farm, then you'll know how your food is raised and if it's raised in a manner that that's what you want to eat or not.
It's called transparency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really encourage people to be food citizens. So, you know, you're eating, you're making a political statement with your dollars when you're buying things, but you also have an obligation, whether you live in a city or a rural space, to make sure you're in touch with your state, your county that has a lot to do with land decisions, with your state, with the federal government, and make sure that they understand how important it is to you as a consumer, as an eater. And I encourage people to geek out in the grocery store and look at all the products. Like if you go in the dairy aisle in Wisconsin, look for the 55, which is the inkjet label, because that says that it was processed in Wisconsin. So there's a start. Start looking at your butter packages and your dairy cartons. And start to understand where is that actually coming from? How did that get to the farm into my shopping cart and on my table?
Sarah Lloyd is a local dairy farmer and a special projects coordinator for the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Kristen Jersik is with a Bratset family farm in Jefferson, Wisconsin. And Lake Effect contributor Dave Kozlowski owns Pinehold Gardens in Oak Creek.
They spoke with Audrey Nowakowski.
You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.